BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. For rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is Yusuf Cat Stevens. Timeless is an overused word in pop music, but in his case, it's entirely appropriate. It's now 50 years since his breakthrough album Tea for the Tillerman brought him international acclaim, and his songs have endured. The first cut is the deepest, Wild World, Father and Son, Moonshadow, Peace Train. They aren't just classics, they're standards, adapted from era to era and genre to genre. But whether you hear him covered by P.P. Arnold, Maxi Priest or Dolly Parton, you can't miss his songwriting. His trademark sincerity and curiosity about life's big questions made him one of the most successful British songwriters of his generation. Those qualities also directed his personal journey. After a high-profile conversion to Islam at the height of his success, he put his guitar down for over 20 years. Today, he's performing again and says, I see music as a gift, and all I'm doing is enjoying that gift. With certain presents, you unwrap it and that's it. The thrill is gone after you've ripped off the wrapping paper. But not with music. Music continues to vibrate and mean something. Yusuf Cat Stevens, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So we'll talk a lot about music today, Yusuf, and its changing place in your life. What does it mean to you now?
It's a mystical thing still. I mean, we can't put it on the sort of laboratory, you know, table and examine it. It's something which permeates our emotions and our soul, sometimes our intellect. Our body moves to it. I mean, there's so many things. But for me, music was a vehicle. It helped propel me towards the direction I wanted to go. In fact, I didn't really know where I was going, but music helped me get there.
Father and Son, Wild World, they're classic tracks, yours, and their enormous popularity has endured. And I always wonder what it feels like to write a song like that. You know, the moment you've completed it and you've really nailed it, it is going to be a hit. Do you know it?
Yeah, I mean, I knew when I was writing a hit, more or less, I knew it was happening. And I was just excited for other people to hear it, you know, and that would be... But I was the first one to hear it, you know. So in a way, you have to be a fan of your own music. You have to be a fan of yourself, in a way, and do things which please you. And to see that imagination then adopted by, you know, millions of other people, it's a pretty incredible, you know, feeling.
Let's get into it then. Disc number one, what's it going to be and why have you chosen it?
I've chosen America. You know, from West Side Story, because that was the musical which really blew my mind and opened the door for me musically. Leonard Bernstein, absolute genius, and I've never got over him, you know, and over his music. And it was me and my pal, we used to watch this as many times as we could. And of course, Natalie Wood had a little bit to do with my infatuation with the film. You know, and we used to go dancing around the telephone boxes outside my front door. This is just a great opener for me.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America. Everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Okay,
buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have, though, to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America. Cadillacs bloom in America. Industry boom in America.
America, from the film soundtrack to West Side Story, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and music by Leonard Bernstein. So, Yusuf Cat Stevens, your parents ran the Moulin Rouge restaurant on Shaftesbury Avenue in central London, in the heart of theatre land. Your mum was Swedish and your dad Greek Cypriot. How did they meet?
They met in Lion's Corner House in Tottenham Court Road. My father had arrived in London, and after quite an adventure, I would say, of a journey going from Cyprus, his homeland, to Egypt first, and living there for many years. and then going to the States, and then finally coming back through Europe to UK. My mother was an au pair, and they met in Lion's Corner House, yeah, over a cup of coffee. And I think my dad, you know, when he spotted my mum, that was it.
So you were the baby of the family. You called Stephen back then, and the youngest of three. Were you expected to help out in the restaurant?
Oh, did I? Of course, yeah. That was my first job. And, of course, I learned that it was quite well paid, too, because it wasn't my dad who was paying me, but it was the customers who were giving me great tips. I was, you know, doing whatever jobs, but the waiter, I think I began about 9 or 10. And, you know, I had my own little waiter's jacket, which I dyed red. Of course, we had as many Cokes as we wanted, as many, you know, cakes as my mum could bake. And so it was a pretty good background as a beginning for me.
You were growing up, you know, surrounded by the buzz of Soho. You had the 100 Club just a few doors down, Carnaby Street, local to you. How much would you say that the place you were growing up shaped your early life?
Totally. But then again, of course, it was not just the place, it was my family. So you had this very sort of Mediterranean, very hot-blooded sort of father, you know, who was very passionate. My mother, who was much cooler, she used to sing to herself, you know, and hum, and she would be very melodic. The way she spoke was like musical. Then you had my brother, who was like the philosopher. So he got me thinking, you know, about life too early on, I think. And my sister, who was really loved me and looked after me and, you know, cared for me. They were both older than me. But then again, as you go out of that kind of sphere, you look at what's going on around you, you see the American dream, like, you know, we just heard it now, I like to live in America. That's the dream, you know, that was a dream to be, to have all those gadgets and those cars and the Levi jeans, and I wanted to get as much of it as I could.
It must have felt like you were growing up in the centre of everything.
It was. And when I wanted to cool off, I'd just go to the British Museum. You know, so when I would skive off school, I went to the mummy department in the Egyptian mummies.
And what were you listening to at home? What sort of sounds were you taking in there?
It was my sister's record collection. And I used to love going up to her room at the top floor in Shaftesbury Avenue and playing her classical records. Actually, they were mostly classical. Porgy and Bess, another musical, which was, you know, Gershwin. And then she had a thing called Red River Rock. And so, you know, on came rock and roll. And with rock and roll, the first single I ever bought, it was Little Richard. And he inspired the Beatles too. I've never heard anything quite like his voice before. It just was magical. It launched me into that whole new experience of rock and roll.
Well, I think on that note, we'd better hear your second disc, Yusuf. What's it going to be?
It's got to be Little Richard's Tutti Frutti.
Womp, bomb, bloom, bomb, lomp, bomb, bomb, tutti frutti, oh, rude. 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 Oh, womp, bomb, bloom, bomb, lomp, bomb, bomb. I got a girl named Sue. She knows just what to do.
Tutti Frutti by Little Richard. So, Yusuf, your faith is a huge part of your life now, of course. As a kid, you had a Swedish Baptist mother and a Greek Orthodox father, and they sent you to a Roman Catholic school, I think. So quite a mix of influences going on. Was religious faith important at home?
Because I went to the Roman Catholic school down in Drury Lane, St Joseph's, I got more of an induction into that than almost anybody. It was obviously not difficult at all to understand life with God. The only problem was I couldn't join in all the little things and the rituals which Roman Catholics were doing, because I was officially, you know, Greek Orthodox. So I had to take on an observer status and sort of watch as they... I always wondered, what did that taste like, you know, that little thing they put on the tongue? But it was an internal experience, because I was left to just connect with God, you know, within myself. And that, I think, was very, very important. The background of the religious school was important.
You also spent a lot of time drawing and went on, of course, to create the artwork for many of your album covers. Did you want to be an artist?
Yeah, I did. I think going back, looking at the influence, it probably was my uncle in Sweden, because his name was Hugo Wickman, and he was an abstract artist, one of the first, in fact, you know, and in Sweden, you know, quite modern out there. And he was the one who really put the pencil in my hand and allowed me to do what I wanted. And wow, you know, that really got me going, especially the fact that he was pretty good at it and he was quite famous. I thought, I might make a living out of this. Yeah.
And how did you come to start playing guitar?
You'd have to put it down to the Beatles, because they came along and changed everything. The world had turned a corner, you know, with the Beatles. When they came on our television sets, we had to be part of it. And I realised that being an artist, maybe, you know, looking at Van Gogh, he wasn't very rich. He died a bit poor. So maybe it's not the way for me. Maybe I'll get everything I want from this career if I was able to get into the music business. So I bought myself a guitar and started my own musical dictionary. And those are my songs. I couldn't really play other people's songs because you had to learn the chords and you had to learn what the words were. And I just thought, no, let's get straight to it. Let's write my own.
And did it take long to start doing that? How quickly did you master it?
Oh, pretty quick, I would think. You know, because you're at that age when you can do anything, you know. And we had a piano in the house too. So my dad bought my sister a piano. And then I transposed what I learnt from the guitar onto the piano.
It's time for another track. And this is your third today already. And what is it and why have you chosen it for us?
Well, it's got to be the moment that, you know, the sound barriers blasted open with John Lennon's scream. And I hope that you're going to play the middle bit of this, because this is the most important part where John Lennon does that primal scream and we all enter a new universe called Twist and Shout.
Shout the Beatles. So, Yusuf, you were just 18 when you had your first hit as Cat Stevens. How had you come by the name?
It was a girlfriend of mine, and, you know, at a certain point I was sitting in a certain manner, and she said, you look a bit like a cat. And I thought, And then later, of course, when we come to choosing a name to take as a career name, Stephen Dimitri Giorgio didn't quite ring right. So I chose Cat, and I just kept Stephen at the end.
So I saw some amazing photographs of one of your very early tours, and you were sharing a bill, I'm sure you remember, with Jimi Hendrix and Engelbert Humperdinck. I mean, that must have been quite a dressing room. What are your memories of that time?
Well, they were sort of still vague, you know, because after all, one of the things I said, I was very frightened of going on stage, so I had to sometimes drink a little bit too much, and Engelbert turned me on to a horrible concoction called, it was brandy and port, but it really worked. I mean, you just had to have one glass of that. And then, of course, there was Jimi Hendrix, and then we heard, first night, I think, it was the Finsbury Astoria, and then we heard, there's a fire on stage. So, but then we found out, of course, that was the first time he ever lit his guitar on stage, and I got to know Jimmy very well, and he was a lovely man, very soft, very gentle, very modest in his own way.
In the wake of that first wave of success and all of that kind of crazy hard work, you became seriously ill. You had TB and spent 3 months in hospital. You were just 19 and it was quite serious. Were you scared?
I didn't know if I was going to die. I mean, I thought maybe the doctors are not telling me everything. You know, they're keeping it back from me. And I was stuck in this hospital, King Edward VII Hospital in Midhurst. And it was the same hospital that Boris Karloff died. I mean, you know, so you can imagine it was pretty creepy for me. But I started at that point looking elsewhere for my life, you know, for what I wanted to do next. And I started reading a Buddhist book. In fact, it was the first time I'd really got into anything beyond Christianity.
It was a long road to recovery, about a year, I think. How did you change over that time?
In the hospital, when I tried to detach myself from the material world, I stopped shaving. I just stopped looking in the mirror. I was reading more and more. It was a great exploration, a great moment in my life where I started stretching out and my soul started expanding. And I was listening to a lot of different music too. You know, it was all happening at that time. And one of my favourite records, actually, which I think we've chosen now as one of the songs, was Electronic Bark by Walter Carlos, who then became Wendy Carlos. But anyway, he did this incredible thing where he transposed all of so many classic Bach pieces of music and Beethoven and turned them into electronic music. Wow, that just took me so far out of this world.
On that note, Yusuf, I think we'll hear your next disc, if you don't mind. Would you care to introduce it?
Yeah. It wasn't from Switched on Bach, because later out came a film called Clockwork Orange, and in there was just the most sublime piece of music which I've ever heard. And still to this day, I think it is the number one song ever written. And it's called Ode to Joy by Beethoven.
Ode to Joy, March from a Clockwork Orange by Wendy Carlos. Yusuf, the early 70s was a period of huge creative and commercial success for you. Six albums in about 4 years, I think. Monobone Jackon, Tea for the Tillerman, Teaser and the Firecat, Catch Bullet 4. And you were a star not just here, but you'd been catapulted to huge success in America. How did you find it?
Going back to West Side Story, you know, America, you know, it was the place to conquer. And I connected, and the audience in the States connected with me. It got very, very, very big. I was destined to be one of the, well, it was a superstar time, you know, that was it. But that got a little bit scary. You know, after a while, I was still on my journey, and so I still had that private, personal, you know, space within me that was, in a way, more important than what else was going on, because I'd made it, I could now live. So now I had to make some kind of change in my life because it was affecting me.
As a young man who, as you say, was still on a kind of spiritual journey, were you happy, do you think?
I was happy that in as much as I was able to control my life as quite an extent, you know. I mean, I could take a holiday, but I didn't. I don't know why, because I suppose I was working. And I enjoyed working. I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed the whole thing. But on my inner search, I was expanding, you know, I was looking at Tao, I was looking at numerology, you know, things like that. I thought maybe the Greeks had it right, you know, maybe Pythagoras worked it out. And I was on the periphery of all these different philosophies and religions while I was, you know, on the road.
As you said, you were doing a lot of soul searching. You'd moved to Rio and then followed a life-changing moment in 1976. You were visiting a friend in Malibu and decided to go swimming. What happened next?
Well, I was an Englishman. I didn't know it wasn't wise to go out at that time of day and go and take a swim. So I did. I decided to turn back and head for shore. And, of course, at that point, I realised I'm fighting the Pacific and there was no way I was going to win. There was only one thing to do, and that was to pray to the Almighty to save me. And I did. I called out to God, and he saved me. And a little wave came from behind. It wasn't big. It was just simply pushing me forward, and the tide somehow had changed, and I was able to get back to land. So I was saved. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen next.
Well, we'll find out in a moment. But first, we have to find some time for your next disc. What are we going to hear, Yusuf, and why?
We're going to hear The Wind by me. So many people love this song, and I love this song, because it talks about the future. And in the future, we really do not know. But for sure, God knows. And that's what I wrote, and that's why it's so potentially descriptive of where I am and where I was.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never I never wanted water once. Never, never, never.
Cat Stevens and The Wind. A quote from you, Yusuf. You can argue with a philosopher, but you can't argue with a good song. And I've got a few good songs.
True.
So you became a Muslim in 1977. Conversion is often portrayed as a moment, I think, but it's usually more of a process. How was it for you?
After this experience in Malibu, you know, I didn't know, obviously, what was going to happen next. And then my brother had visited Jerusalem. He'd just got married to an Israeli girl, and he was holidaying there. And he discovered sort of this mosque, you know, in the middle of Jerusalem. He saw the way in which they were praying. It was so kind of peaceful. It was so beautiful. When he came back to London, he was inspired to buy me the Quran as one of the books, you know, that which I might be interested in. And so that was the beginning, really. That was, I would never have picked up the Quran. I wouldn't. I was not really interested in it because it was the last thing on my list, in a way, because my father was Greek Cypriot. You know, there was a thing about the Turks. But I was a free spirit. So I started reading the Quran, and that became the gateway. I was still on tour. At the same time, going back to my hotel room, it was just the Quran. I was engrossed in this book. And, of course, I knew there was going to be some kind of impact about this decision. And in the end, after a year, I couldn't hold myself back. I just had to bow down. You know, I said, this is what I was asking for. In the ocean, God save me, I'll work for you. So, okay, this is it. This is the deal.
Of course, so many fans who have spoken about their shock when you appeared to be stepping away from the songs that meant so much to them.
Well, that was a heart tug, you know, because I did feel, and well, this is very true, I felt a responsibility to my fans. And the responsibility was actually that I needed to make this step, because otherwise I would have been a terrible hypocrite if I'd have written all those songs and then suddenly found what I was looking for and then, yeah, let's write another song. Let's make another album. Let's do another tour. No, I needed to get real. And it was the time where I stopped singing and started taking action, you know, with what I believed. And so therefore I hoped that people would understand, because if they listen to the song, it says, listen to Leah on the road to find out. It actually says, you know, pick up a good book, kick out the devil's sin. You know, the answer lies within. I thought everybody should get this.
And did they?
It didn't quite work out like that. Some did, but everybody probably wanted me to keep on making records.
For now, some more music, I think. It's your sixth disc today. Why have you chosen it?
When you hear these things about music and Islam, you just have to remove the veneer a little bit, and you'll see that in the culture of Islam, it was probably the Muslim Spain that introduced the guitar into Europe, you know. And one of the great musicians, I think, from Africa, West Africa, Ali Farkaturi, you know, I mean, God, you can see where the blues came from. Mina am fana sento na alauya
maria mena bonika am bode bawe maria tende femina am fana sento na alauya
alauya Ali Farkaturi. Yusuf, after your conversion, you became one of the most high-profile Muslims in the UK overnight. That must have been a huge responsibility to take on.
Yes, it was. I mean, now I had a kind of a new audience, if you like, and they were split. You know, obviously, there was the Muslim world, which was absolutely infatuated with me because they loved the idea of this pop star, you know, who's become a Muslim. And, you know, in Turkey, there would be crowds, you know, coming to hear me give talks and things like that. And I was raised to this kind of pedestal. But then on the other side, there were those who said, well, you know, he's a bit of a traitor, isn't he? I mean, you know, he's a turned Turk, if you like. And that I had to deal with. And that was like very, very difficult, because at one point I was an icon of the majority, you know, and now I'm a part of the minority who are kind of looked down upon and certainly to a large extent misunderstood. People didn't know, for instance, you know, the Muslims believe in Jesus or believe in, you know, Moses and so many things which people are ignorant of. And there is the problem with the Muslims themselves, you know, where they're unable to express themselves and explain themselves. So I was used to be a kind of a little bit of a spokesman. You know, I spoke English without an accent. And so kind of useful, really, for certain occasions.
As you mentioned, you were routinely called upon by the media for comment on news stories, and one of them was the fatwa against Salman Rushdie in 1989. Now, reports at the time suggested that you supported it, something you've since denied. What actually happened?
I was really certainly not prepared or equipped to deal with shark-toothed journalists and the whole way in which the media spins stories. And so I was cleverly framed, I would say, by certain questions where I couldn't, for instance, rewrite the Ten Commandments. You know, you can't expect me to do that. At the same time, I never actually ever supported the fatwa. I even wrote a whole kind of press statement, which very early on, which the press ignored, completely ignored. And they went for the one which was written by the journalist who originally broke the story. And so I had to live through that. But the interesting thing is it brought me to kind of study the whole subject of jurisprudence, which again led me to realise that music, where you have certain rules which are dictated to by certain scholars, you have to dig a bit deeper and then you find out, no, hang on, this is an opinion. An opinion. That's what a fatwa is, actually. It's an opinion. Doesn't come directly from the Quran at all. And so I found out about music. It started opening up for me.
What was it like to play again after not doing so for a couple of decades, I think?
It was absolute magic. I mean, because having laid myself fallow for all those years, almost two decades, I had all these ideas. Music was just flooding through me. Well, the first thing I did was to write a song and called Wind East and West. Nobody's heard that yet. But I started, you know, re-orbiting the whole idea of writing again and recording again. It's all in destiny and it's all out there waiting for me to do this. And I knew it was right.
It's time for your seventh disc today, Yusuf. What are we going to hear and why have you chosen this one?
It kind of speaks for itself because of the repercussions of my inability to explain myself, my position, and perhaps not be learned enough in many cases to explain. So don't let me be misunderstood. And there are many reasons for this song. One of them, obviously, because of prejudice that we carry around, we don't know we've got it. The other thing is because Nina Simone was just such an influence on my musical history. And I used to love her. I used to listen to her so much. And I first of all thought she was a guy. You know, she had a very deep voice. But no, when I found out who she was and then I started listening to her, she's one of my favourite artists of all time.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Nina Simone and Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. Yusuf, these days you're Yusuf Cat Stevens online and happy to embrace your former name. And of course, today we've been looking back at your childhood as Stephen Giorgio. How does it feel to reflect on the different stages and phases in your life?
When I finally became a Muslim, I had another role to play, and that is to try and bring peace, you know, between two very beautiful worlds, you know. But the one that I belong to is, yeah, it's Islam, you know. I'm not shy of saying that. But what made me a Muslim was what we find in the West is a certain freedom. And so the freedom to choose is a God-given gift. That's the gift. But then we have to be responsible for the decisions we make. And there's the story, really.
We reflected on your changing names. I wonder how much you've changed as a person over the time.
Can you not see my grey beard and slightly... I'm obviously now older. I'm now 72. I really never thought I'd ever get to this, you know, distance, but thank God, you know, we're still here. and we're still working and we're still creating. And I'm very, 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 very fortunate.
It's almost time to cast you away, Yusuf. How do you think you'll cope in isolation on the island?
I think I'll do very well, to be honest. I mean, that was where I started, you know, back in the hospital alone, reading. Okay, first it was a Buddhist book, but, you know, now it would be the Quran. So I would have that. At the same time, you know, okay, there are not many people around, but yeah, God's there. So I wouldn't feel lonely.
So spiritually you'd be all right, but what about physically? What about the kind of rigours of island life? What kind of island are you hoping for?
Well, because I love the sun, surely it has to be somewhere near the equator. You know, you get a balanced day, you know, 7 o'clock to 7 o'clock, sunrises, sunsets, and that's nice. You know, you need vitamin D, I know that, that'll be solved. Water, yep, got lots of that. trees, well, that's the other thing. I mean, I'd hope I'd have learnt something by that time about farming or what the tiller man should have taught me somewhere along the line. And I'll be, you know, doing my best to survive and pick those fruits all the way up there in the tree, you know.
And of course, you'll have the music to keep you going. Time for one last disc before we cast you away. What are we going to hear and why are you taking this one with you?
I'd love to hear Stevie Wonder sing As, who I think was the best thing after the Beatles. And, you know, he's a very spiritual man as well, obviously, if you listen to his lyrics. But he really is epitomises for me the music, 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 and with such a soul. Beautiful.
As around the sun, the earth, no, it seems revolving. And the rosebuds know to bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind assured that I'll be loving you always. As now can't reveal the mystery of tomorrow, but in passing we'll grow older every day. Just as all that's born is new, do know what I say is true, that I'll be loving you always.
Stevie Wonder with As. So the time has come to cast you away, Yusuf. To help you settle in on the island, we will send you away with your discs and three books, the complete works of Shakespeare, the Quran, and a book of your choice. What will that be?
Well, I think it would have to be, because everything I need really, I suppose, ultimately is in the Quran. But to go even further into the human sphere, I mean, sort of poetry and prose, I would like to have a book by Rumi. And I would probably pick the Mathnawi, which is an immense work of couplets and poems by Rumi.
It's yours. You can also take a luxury item to help you pass the time more enjoyably on the island. What would you like?
It would be Bendix bitter mints, because I have such a sweet tooth. I mean, you can imagine growing up, you know, in a cafe, Coca-Cola, you know, almond cakes and everything all around you. So Bendix bitter mints is it.
And if you could just save one of your eight tracks from being washed away, which would you go for?
I would pick Stevie Wonder. And I think that because it was unprepared and not composed so perfectly, it's got life. Yeah.
Yusuf Cat Stevens, thank you very much for sharing your Desert Island Discs with us.
Thank you. Come along sometime. You know, I'm still here.
Hello. I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Yusuf Cat Stevens. We've cast many musicians away to our island, including two people whose music was chosen by Yusuf. You can find Stephen Sondheim's programme, as well as Paul McCartney's choice of Desert Island Discs, in our archive through BBC Sounds. Next time, my guest will be the actor and director, Samantha Morton. I do hope you'll join us.
My father-in-law lived alone. Everybody knew it.
Late afternoon in the high plains of South Africa. A bloody encounter and a chase.
If you're attacked on a farm, your chances of surviving is not good.
In a community stalked by fear and racial tensions, an explosion of violence puts a family on trial.
What did they do so bad to get that beating?
Bloodlands, presented by me, Andrew Harding, is available on BBC Sounds. Just search for Bloodlands and download all 5 episodes now.